The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated French Open in years, and Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your smart TV or your phone live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to continue their legacy on the clay courts? From the first serve to the final point, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it all happens. Welcome, everyone, to Monday Match Analysis. I'm Gil Gross. Andrei Rublev is Madrid champion. He beats Felix Auger-Aliassime, coming from behind in the final from a set down, to win his second career Masters 1000 title. Excited to break this final down, as always. I'll start with some big picture Andre thoughts before I do so. I'll finish with some big picture Felix thoughts. Is he back? We'll talk about that. And then we'll hit the French Open Power Rankings at the end of the show. Second edition of the Power Rankings on today, May 5th, with Rome around the corner. How about that? Draw comes out tomorrow, my new newsletter, where I curate the best tennis content on the internet every week. So I just want to also give you a quick reminder to subscribe to The Draw if you have not already. The link is in the description. It is thedraw.tennis/subscribe as well. Okay, so Rublev called this the proudest title of his career. Makes sense to me. He comes in, he's lost 4 straight matches, 8 straight sets, doesn't seem to love the altitude historically, never won 3 matches in Madrid in his career. I put him on upset alert. Turns out he's sick. We find out after this final that he's had some mystery illness that made it, quote, impossible to swallow, impossible to eat, gave him a headache, caused finger and feet inflammation to the point where he couldn't put his shoes on. All this is happening. He ends up not only with a huge title run, but with a tier one win, one of the best of his career against Carlos Alcaraz. Such a big win. And he goes all the way. To continue a pattern that I think has been very evident in the past 2 years, which is that Andrei Rublev handles big matches better now. Mentally, he's just so much better at this. And look, this was a complicated performance mentally, and we'll kind of get into that. But at the end of the day, if you take a look at the larger sample of the Masters 1000 finals he's played and the major quarterfinals he's played, I know he hasn't won one, but still, if you look at it, the common thread is that he is better at performing at or near his best in these big matches. And now he's got big titles in back-to-back years, which was such a difficult bar for him to clear for the years prior. I felt that coming into last year, that needed to be kind of the principal goal in Andrei Rublev's career. And now he's done it back-to-back years. And two is historically a big number. Now, I think that this can get overblown by some people, because it's a very interesting way to frame it, right? There are a lot of incredible players who only won one Masters 1000 title, especially in the previous era. Del Potro, Dimitrov, Soderling, Ferrer, Cilic, Wawrinka, Thiem. So whenever somebody wins the second Masters 1000 title, it's so easy to look at that list and be like, wow, look at that. This is really hard to do. And while I don't want to discredit the entire idea completely, I do think that it's harder, or it was harder, to win Masters 1000 titles in that era, because once upon a time, when you had prime athlete Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray, they were all gunning for each and every one of these. And they were healthy, and they were playing, and they cared, so it was really hard to win these. So I don't think it's apples to apples. But I always say this about everything. I mean, the biggest difference on a tennis resume is 0 to 1. That's the biggest difference. And then 1 to 2 is a pretty big difference as well. Then after that, I think it starts to lower in significance. But 1 versus 2 is a really big difference. But all in all, like between the adversity that he faced, the circumstance that he was in coming in, the big win over Alcaraz, the size of the title, it makes sense why Andrei Rublev would call this the proudest title of his career. He should be damn proud of this Madrid title. So let's get into the match. Felix gets off to a really quick start. And the main headline here is he is crushing backhands. Hawkeye read that through the first five games of the match where Felix had a 4-1 lead. His miles per hour was up 7 on average. 7 mile per hour average uptick versus his tournament average to start the final. He was hitting second serve returns, early, clean, big, offensive. There was a 30-15 point on a second serve on the ad side, right? And he hits this second serve and he gets it out wide to Rublev's backhand, which Felix doesn't do all that well. Usually his second serves are closer to the middle of the box. But he gets this one out wide. And Rublev, of course, hits the backhand return cross court to Felix's backhand. And FAA steps in and redirects a +1 backhand down the line, sets up an overhead. I'm like, who is this guy? What's going on here? Is this going to be the thing? Like, am I going to come on Monday Match Analysis, Felix Auger-Aliassime is Madrid champion, and I'm going to be like, you guys, his backhand was awesome. Because through five games, that's what it seemed like this was going to be. But no. Mean reversion. Back to kind of average. And throughout the match, Auger-Aliassime's backhand is not an above average tour backhand. And there are issues with pace absorption. And there's no open stance drive backhand on the run. I saw one in the match, the whole time watching, I saw him do it once really well. But in general, defensively, there are issues there. He's slicing a lot. He's getting into kind of awkward closed stance footwork when he's on the run. And there's too many second return errors. There's too many neutral baseline errors. It actually seems like when Felix is going after the ball, like when he's attacking his backhand, it actually gets more consistent. Like there was an awesome breakpoint save in the third set where he laced two backhands cross court in a row to save the breakpoint. But it's not that Felix doesn't have access to great backhands. That's not the problem. He generates pretty good racket speed off of that side, can hit a pretty heavy backhand, can find a good angle once in a while. That's not the problem. The problem is it's unreliable. All right, so that unreliability, it seeps in. And Felix's backhand cools. I'm kind of going on a tangent here about FAA's backhand because I just think it was one of the main areas that kind of separated the match into its two parts, which was, part one, Felix is up big. It's going to end up winning him the first set. And then part two, where Rublev is running into one specific problem, but other than that, he's dominating the match, which I'll get into. But at the end of the day, Felix's backhand cools, and I'm never going to love FAA's chances on second serve return points or in neutral baseline rallies when his backhand isn't performing, because those are the two scenarios where he is forced to hit his backhand well, and he's forced to hit it often. In addition to FAA having the hot start on his backhand, Rublev had a slow start in a multitude of ways. He started the match with back-to-back double faults, came out with zero intensity. It looked like someone dragged him out of bed for an 8 a.m. practice. And then after the match, we learned that he hadn't slept in 4 days. He's been really calm throughout the week. And at this point, I don't know if it's because of what he's dealing with. Like sometimes when you are physically ill, you don't really have the energy and you don't have the expectation for yourself to really get all worked up all the time. And that can kind of lead to a player being more calm on court. I don't know if it's that, or I don't know if it's still just him trying to adjust his mentality after Dubai, but you know, it's something that he said after the Alcaraz match that he was kind of proud of how level-headed he stayed. And in the third set in this match, holy moly, he showed off a lot of composure with the way that played out. But compared to the first like 20 minutes, he had to just pick up his energy. He had to. And he did. But it was 4-1, 40 love for FAA. It was 4-1, Felix serving up 40 love. He ends up getting broken in that game. So Rublev gets back in the set. Andre ended up being 2 points away from 5-all twice. So he really almost got back in the first set. Rublev, down the stretch of the first set, started dominating mostly every time there was an exchange of ground strokes. And that dominance from the back really continued for the rest of the match, especially on serve. Rublev didn't face a break point for the entire match after getting broken in the fifth game. Didn't face a single break point. The problem with the first set is that Rublev didn't ultimately make enough returns to fully climb back into the set. He got the one break back, but he couldn't get the second break back because Felix was getting too many free points. And that Felix's serve was Andre's biggest problem in the match. In fact, I would go as far to say that was the problem in the match for Andre Rublev. The rest was gravy. Like, he was beating Felix in every single area of the game, in my estimation. But the serve was a challenge. Returning the serve effectively, that was a big challenge. And coming into the match, I knew that that might be... Look, I had that circled. Because Felix... I mean, for this match, he's averaging 129 miles per hour on first serves. That is massive heat. The roof is closed. They're playing in altitude. Rublev is not a very good returns in play guy. I've covered this many times. And there have been, I think, a couple of finals in the last year or so where I've gone over this with Andre Rublev, and maybe some of them weren't finals, but I've gone over this and it's like he's not making returns in play against big servers. He's losing these matches, and that is why. And I want to get into why, but like the point is it doesn't matter if Rublev is beating Felix from neutral if he can't get to neutral. And if you look at the first set, which was 6-4 to Felix, and then through three games in the second set, at that moment in time, they played one rally more than nine shots. So that is 13 games of tennis. And they played one rally more than nine shots. And Felix served 77% in the first set. That first serve percentage would dip. You get more second serves. You get into more rallies. Obviously, that's going to be a help. But let's talk about this serve return dynamic. Because the reason why Rublev is not a great returns in play guy and an elite server like Felix in really good serving conditions like Madrid is going to be able to take advantage of that is because Andre implements, and I just made this up. I've never said this on the show. It just kind of came to me. Rublev implements what I would call casino returning. Stand close.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated French Open in years, and Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your smart TV or your phone live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to continue their legacy on the clay courts? From the first serve to the final point, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it all happens.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Guess location. Choose a grip, a drive grip, either forehand drive or backhand grip, and swing big. So I'm going to say it again. Stand close, guess location, choose a drive grip, and swing big. That's casino returning. When the ball is coming in an average of 129 miles per hour, it's really hard to return that way with any kind of consistency. Now at 5-6 in the second set, after Rublev kind of started to hold easily, started to dial it in from the back, better energy, better intensity. But Felix, he's also holding, he's serving really well. At 5-6 in the second set, Andre hits Yahtzee. You know, like there's obviously a good, sometimes at the casino, you can, you know, usually you lose money, but there are good outcomes there. So at 5-6, you get the full reward. And what went down in this game, 5-6 in the second set, was fascinating. Rublev's coaches before the game said, under pressure, he goes T. So Andre went to his coaching box before the game. And I don't know if it was Fernando Vicente or not, but his coaches said, under pressure, he goes T. Look for that. Now in set one, I looked at the Hawkeye. And on the ad side, that was the most obvious tendency for FAA, was his preference for the T serve on the ad side. 66% T, 17% wide on the ad. The rest went body. So 66 to 17, right? 15-30, we get a serve on the ad side, and this is a pressure serve, right? So it's 15-30. Andre's 2 points away from the set. Let's see if Rublev's coaches are right. Rublev leans T, picks his forehand drive grip, gets a really solid strike on a first serve return right through the middle of the court, but with a lot of pace, FAA's rushed. He shanks the plus one forehand. At 15-40, Rublev kind of reads the wide serve, this time on the deuce, missed a forehand winner across court by about two ball lengths. Now it's 30-40. Is he going to go T again on the ad? Like the tendency would suggest, Andre guesses and anticipates that T-serve, gets that T-serve, connects perfectly with the return, right at Felix's feet this time. Great depth, forehand error on the plus one for FAA. The friend of casino returning is predictability. Otherwise, it's just guesswork. Felix showed a tendency on the ad side, and I'm sure it wasn't just in the first set. You know, obviously Rublev's team looked at Madrid and looked at career numbers and all of that. But what they told Andre before that service game ended up being spot on. And when Rublev is just selling out, guessing, and swinging big, you get a huge reward. Now, of course, the other ingredient here is missed spot serve. So I'm pulling up on YouTube. You can see it. The second set spot serving for FAA. And I've highlighted the three serves that he hit on the ad side here that ended up resulting in the 3 points that he lost behind his first serve. And the two T serves were missed spots. They bled way too far into the Rublev forehand. And then the second point of the game was a wide serve that was a really bad missed spot that Rublev also connected on for another first ball miss by Felix. I know I've only accounted for 3 points. I will just add the other point that Rublev won in this game was at 15 all. I want to say it was a second serve, but they got into a neutral rally and Felix hit a backhand down the line that was a textbook example of bad shot selection. Literally, I would like to show this as an example if I were teaching a class on what bad shot selection looks like. Now, I want to say, I didn't think that FAA made that many shot selection mistakes in this match. I don't think that that was a common mistake for him, but this one was bad. Like, he tried to take his weaker shot, his backhand, down the line, off balance, on the run, off of a deep ball by Rublev, with Andre in position. Like, it was just it was a horrifying decision. Anyway, that was the break of serve. Rublev wins the second set. Missed spots, kind of a tendency getting exposed there, and Rublev's casino returning ends up working on that particular occasion. But in the third set, once again, Felix's free points continued to be a lifeline for him, especially because he was serving pretty clutch, making first serves at the end of games. And by the way, total unreturned serves for the match. I don't have it first serves only, which I wish I did. I think it would be around 50% if I had that number. If I were to guess, I don't have that number. I only have total serves. And Rublev was basically automatic, making every second return. But still, Felix's unreturned percentage was 33% for the match. So total service points, 33% unreturned. Listen to this, okay? Here's how clutch the serving was for Felix. Here's how often the serve got him out of a jam in the third set. At love one, service winner from deuce. At 1-2, ace service winner from 15-40 down. So he saves 2 break points and holds and doesn't need to even play a ground stroke. 4-5, service winner to hold from 30 all. So there were countless examples of this. There were some close service games where Felix did come up with big forehands or a good baseline rally, but ultimately it was mostly the serving and the dam was going to break. Like coming into the 5-6 game, FAA serving at 5-6, return points were 18-3 for the set. All 5 Felix service holds required either a break point save or a 15-30 comeback. One or the other. So every service game was hard. The dam was going to break. 5-6 in the third, Felix makes 3 first serves to start the game and 2 don't come back. He's up 30-15. From there, he missed 3 first serves in a row, double faulted at 30-15, 30-all, terrific point by Rublev. One of the longest points of the match. Return went deep to Felix's backhand. Rublev did a beautiful job of hitting second returns deep to Felix's backhand. It was almost automatic every single time. Just start the point, go to work from there. Rublev was awesome in that respect. He kept the ball on Felix's two-hander for the next couple of shots, got a short ball, laced a forehand inside in, controlled the point from there. FAA never had a chance to attack on a forehand, and eventually he made a neutral backhand unforced error long. 30-40, another first serve miss, and it is the dreaded double fault on championship point. So 2 double faults on that last service game for Felix, but honestly, it's not like here's the thing about the double faults. It's a disappointing way to finish the match, but statistically, FAA finishes 14-39, 36% on second serves. Like, it's not as if he could just put the ball in the box and he was winning points. So if the reason he double faulted was he was trying to do a little extra and hit a better second serve that perhaps was, I don't know, going to result in him getting a first ball forehand, just as a thought, like if that is why he double faulted twice, then I have no problem with it. I would applaud him for that, for changing something up and doing something different. I don't know that that's the case. Maybe he double faulted twice because of the nerves and he choked. But all I'm saying is I'm less likely to get on a guy for double faulting if you clearly are not winning your second serve points, even when the second serve is going in. Because at that point, maybe you should be trying to do more with it. There was a physical breakdown in the third set for FAA. Started stretching out his hamstrings early in the third, started getting massages from the physio at the changeovers midway through the third, moving okay during the points. But the main things that I saw was, one, just not able to push on every return point, or maybe not wanting to push on every return point. So, I mean, I gave you the stat. He only won 3 return points for the third set. And, you know, it wasn't like he lost the set 6-1. Like, he played plenty of return games, and he only won 3 points. And then the other thing was maybe the legs getting tired hurt his serve consistency. Now, the percentage overall was fine. Ended up being 65% for the third set. It was 64% for the second set for FAA. But it did feel like the start of the games were missed first serves, and then he would kind of get it together when he needed it. So maybe the first serve would have been more consistent like it was in the first set if he had more in the legs. But at the end of the day, you look at the path that Felix had to get to that point. You look at the way the match was being played, which was not physical, an abundance of short, quick points. Roof is closed in Madrid. As far as I'm concerned, there is nothing particularly oppressive about the conditions. I mean, he shouldn't have been breaking down physically at that point. It must be said. Now, I suppose it was nerves. It's a big final. It's a Masters 1000. I don't think that Felix is... I don't think he has a fitness problem. And because I don't think he has a fitness problem, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And I'll say the reason why he started it, it seemed like kind of cramping, although the cramps never got all that bad, never got very debilitating. The reason that was happening was probably because of big match nerves, which happens sometimes. It's not ideal, but I guess it happens sometimes. And Felix hasn't been in a lot of these matches recently. I don't think that it was the difference in the match anyway. I think that at the end of the day, the margins were too slim for FAA. He needed to make first serves. He needed free points. Rublev was getting the better of him really whenever the points were developing outside of FAA's serve. And to me, that's not a sustainable way to win a tennis match for the most part. I mean, you can do it in some conditions if you are able to maintain a really high first serve percentage. And, you know, especially if you're playing clutch and tie breaks, right? So it's possible. But to me, it's not really a sustainable way to win. It was always going to put Rublev in a better position to win the match. And I really felt that Andre was going to win the match pretty much the whole time after the start, like after that 4-1 40 love game where Felix got broken in the first set. So I do want to answer the question, why was Rublev so dominant outside of the return issues that he was having? And I think there are a lot of right answers to that question. Seriously, I think there are a lot of different things you could say that would probably be correct. There's not one answer. But I'll just give it a shot. Like, here's what kind of goes through my head when I'm trying to answer that question. Like, why is Rublev better than Felix in a neutral baseline rally? Well, first of all, the forehands, they're both deadly weapons, but Rublev's misfires less. So there's a consistency edge there, a reliability edge there. The backhand disparity, though, to me is massive. I think it's a huge deal. And I know Rublev's not Mr. Backhand. We don't put him up in the likes of Medvedev or Zverev or Djokovic or Sinner, and rightly so, but it's damn good. It's a damn good backhand, and I think when he's on the court against FAA, it really does come out. That balance that Rublev has compared to the imbalance of Felix is a big deal, because for Rublev, even when the ball gets onto his backhand, he keeps control of points with it offensively. He sets up his forehand well. It is consistent. Well, for Felix, it's kind of an escape valve defensively. You feel like if you're in trouble against Felix or if you're returning serve against Felix and you get it to the backhand, you're out of trouble. It's a target in neutral because you don't feel like Felix is going to consistently make, I don't know, four backhands cross court deep in a row without missing. And it's a target in defense. And in fairness, I think Rublev's backhand is a bit of a target in defense as well, but it's just hard to get into that position against Andre because he's such a great ball striker off of both wings. I also think that Rublev absorbs quality better. So if the ball is coming fast, if it's coming deep, right? Like if I just think Rublev absorbs quality better than Felix, if that makes sense. He constructs points better. There's a consistent high margin aggression that Rublev has mastered that I don't think Felix has yet. And then there's one other way I think I could put it. Felix is elite in one phase of the game. Like, I think Felix is elite offensively. I think Andre is elite in two phases of the game. I think he's elite offensively, just like Felix. I also think that Rublev is elite from neutral. I think he is an excellent player from neutral. The third phase would be defense. I would say neither is elite. But Rublev, to me, he's great in two phases. Felix is great in one phase, which is when he's on the front foot and he gets to step inside the court and attack forehands. That's where he's lethal. He's awesome. He's incredible. He's overwhelming. But you get him out of that setting, and that's where problems begin to emerge. All right? That's all I got on the final. Is Felix back? I want to just answer that question. He comes into Madrid this year, 0-10, against top 75 opponents. That is why I did not see this coming. I considered making him the dark horse in this quarter. I gave him a little shout-out. But I didn't do it because the results haven't been there. Is he back? Is this what he needed to kind of make that push back to the top 10? I think it's clear that if he's healthy and confident, and right now it seems like the knee is right, the serve percentages are back where they need to be, the forehand is back to being the weapon that it needs to be, and if those things are all clicking, the serve plus one can power him through a lot of conditions. Meaning he can win a lot in specific conditions with his serve plus one. But I feel the same way about his game now that I have his whole career. Like nothing has changed for me. No opinions have changed after Madrid, which is that after the serve and the forehand, I'm not impressed enough with anything else. I'm just not. And as a result, I think it's very conditions reliant and confidence reliant, and that's just how it's going to be. Do I think he can get back to number six in the world again? He did it once. He can do it again. But think about what he had to do that year to do it. He had to basically win or make he had to win everything indoors. He won three titles in February. He was awesome after the U.S. Open. So he just basically maximized, anytime the conditions were suitable for him, he completely maximized it. We saw him have a big run in Basel at the end of last year, and he didn't necessarily build on it at the start of this year when it was time to go outside Australia, out in the elements. So And look, Madrid's an outdoor tournament. Roof was closed for this final, but I do think it's probably the most indoorsy outdoor tournament of the year. I think the architecture, at least in Cajamarca, and I understand that Felix didn't play all of his matches on center court, but I just think Madrid is another example of sort of unique conditions in which his forehand and his serve are uniquely deadly and amplified in a way that a lot of opponents just can't deal with the serve plus one whatsoever. And then he's difficult to beat. But I do think there's a limitation there. I just think there's limitations. So can he make a push back towards the top 10? Yes, but I think it'll look a lot like it looked in 2022, and that means winning in conditions that suit him. I want to talk about one thing before I get to the French Open power rankings. And let me be clear, what you're about to hear is a criticism of the Mutua Madrid Open. Now, they did better than last year. Like last year, I think there was like a laundry list. It's like this, you know, you could have done 20 minutes on every way Madrid messed up the tournament last year. And this year they did better, but I was pretty disgusted by what I saw in the final. A four-person lines crew. And my only hesitation in talking about this is, again, like, lines judges are about to not be a thing next year. So it's like, how much time do I want to spend on this? I don't know, but I just have to get it off my chest, because how in the world for a Masters 1000 tournament do you not have a full lines crew, which means three lines judges on each baseline? So this is what it looks like. And the reason this was consequential is because FAA was flirting with a double fault on the deuce side, on the center line, over and over and over again. And I'm not here to tell you that Felix was foot faulting. I'm not here to tell you that. I don't think it was ever egregious or blatant or obvious, but it was consistently close. And while I can't tell you for sure that FAA ever foot faulted, meaning I can't say he did it on this point or he did it on this point, what I can tell you is I don't believe for a second that he went that whole match without foot faulting. I just don't. The problem is, because of the lines judge setup here, they were in no position to call it. They were in no position to call it. Because when you have two lines judges on each side, the way they're configured here is as so. I put a red dot where both of them stand on the near side of the court. Then on the far side of the court, the one lines judge is going to need to look at the center service line to watch Felix's serve to see if it goes in or out. And then after Felix's serve, they're going to kind of shuffle on over to their left to then judge the single sideline. So they're going to move in the middle of the point. Look, this is standard. Like, this isn't crazy, but for a Masters 1000 final, this is crazy. This is ridiculous. Because again, a player is not allowed at any point in the service motion to cross the center service line. And I'm going to blow this up for you guys so that you can see it more carefully. Felix on the deuce side, when he kind of, with his back foot, his right foot, he almost rears back and takes a step back and gets really close to that center line. And don't tell me this doesn't matter, because it does. It does matter. Because if Felix had to move a couple of inches to his right, so more out to the deuce side, what does that mean? That means he is 2 inches further away from finding a first ball forehand. He is whatever small percentage more likely to have to hit a first ball backhand. That matters. Like, if this foot fault rule wasn't a rule, Felix would be even further to his left. He'd like to get as close to the center as possible. The fact that they were in no position to judge this, because it would have had to be the far lines judge making this call. Come on now. That's embarrassing. This is a Masters 1000 final. Let's do better. That's all I got. Let's go to the French Open power rankings. Okay, prerequisite here before I get into it. I'm always careful with Madrid. You got to take it easy with Madrid. You don't want to overadjust for this tournament. I think everybody understands why. I mean, just are you watching the tennis? It looks like Wimbledon out there. It does. Like, it was all offense, offense, offense. Nobody could defend. Nobody could move. The serves were flying through the air in the altitude. Like, it was just offense was being rewarded. Defense was not. That's not Roland Garros tennis. It's just not. So it's still tennis. They are on a clay court. We are still now about 3 weeks away from the French Open. In fact, we are 21 days away from the French Open. So it's not like there's going to be no movement in the French Open power rankings, but I'm just saying, I'm always going to take it easy when it comes to Madrid. The adjustments are not going to be wild. Okay, so reveal in 3, 2, 1. Here it is. There's no movement at the top. I'll talk about the biggest movers. You got to start with Nadal. Nadal comes in at number 7 in my May 5th French Open power rankings after not being included at all in the first edition of the power rankings because at that point, I just wasn't convinced he was going to play. In Madrid, he won 3 matches in a row for the first time since US Open 2022, and it just doesn't take much for him to climb these power rankings. I only need a little bit of short-term evidence to go along with that unmatched track record to where I'm feeling like Nadal is a bigger threat to win Roland Garros than a lot of these other guys. And the way I'm thinking about it now when it comes to Rafa is like, okay, obviously if he wins this year, that would be very surprising. Like, let's not get it twisted. I don't care that he's won 14. It would be very surprising if he wins this year. It just would. But who would it be, like, who would be more surprising slash less surprising? Like, I'd be more surprised if Rublev won Roland Garros. I'd be more surprised today if Medvedev won Roland Garros. I'd be more surprised today if Runa won Roland Garros. That's why Nadal is above these guys in the power rankings, because that, to me, is the weight of his RG track record, his clay court track record, his career track record. And also, you know, he just beat a top 15 player, and the tennis that he's played has been pretty good. So Nadal debuts at number 7 in the power rankings. Another change, Ruud leapfrogs Tsitsipas. I felt it was very close between them coming out of Barcelona, but Steph just took a bad loss to Thiago Monteiro. That's a loss outside of the top 100 that I understand the difficult circumstances for Tsitsipas coming off of back-to-back finals, but it's not a player he should lose to. Ruud, who had played just as much tennis, beat Ketsmanovic, beat Nori before losing to FAA in the quarterfinals. So it was close coming in. Ruud with a better Madrid. He takes over Tsitsipas. Medvedev was having a good week, but the injury in the quarterfinal leaves me with a lot more concern than anything else. So Daniil drops down 2 spots. He's leapfrogged by the Madrid champion, Andre Rublev, who moves up to 8. So Rublev, who is on a 4-match losing streak, just hanging on by a thread at number 10 in the power rankings, moves up to number 8. Like, do I think that he deserves to pass Zverev or Tsitsipas or Ruud or Nadal? No, I'm sorry. And I know we won Madrid, but to me, it's not enough for him to pass those guys. And then lastly, Runa, he won a tight 3-setter against Navone, then lost one to Talon Griegspoor. He probably needs something in Rome to stay in this top 10 because at this point, he is purely living off of what he did last year. Let me address the top real quick. I thought that Sinner or Alcaraz would overtake Djokovic this week, but neither of them had positive weeks, particularly with Sinner pulling out with the injury and then pulling out of Rome, Alcaraz losing to Rublev, and then pulling out of Rome as well. So, you know, it's a stalemate. There's not going to be any movement. I think that Ruud or Tsitsipas, who knows, maybe someone else, but in particular, I think Ruud or Tsitsipas with a big Rome could join those guys, like might be able to surpass one of those guys. I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out, but I think it's a possibility. Hope you enjoy. Don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you next time.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.